Our first reading this morning is from the sociologist Robert Bellah. After co-writing the books Habits of the Heart and The Good Society, our denomination asked him to turn his lens on us. This is from his report back to us in 1998. Some of his points may sound a bit dated, yet his main argument is no less true today than it was then. And as we're talking about membership and belonging this morning, Lane and I have asked our membership chair, Leslie Armstrong, to share this reading with you. Leslie.
It is no accident that the United States, with its high elevation of the individual person, is nonetheless alone among North Atlantic societies in the percentage of our population who live in poverty, and that we are dismantling what was already the weakest welfare state of any North Atlantic nation. Just when we are moving to an ever greater validation of the sacredness of the individual person, our capacity to imagine a social fabric that would hold individuals together is vanishing. And this is in no small part due to the fact that our religious individualism is linked to an economic individualism, which ultimately knows nothing of the sacredness of the individual. If the only standard is money, then all other distinctions are undermined. What economic individualism destroys and what religious individualism cannot restore is solidarity, a sense of being members of the same body.
Our second reading today comes from the meditation manual, Voices from the Margins, a collection of writings from UU people of color across North America. Here is Manish Mishra Marzetti's piece titled River Call. Lane?
Between rocking the boat and sitting down, between stirring things up and peaceably going along, we find ourselves here in community. Each called from many different journeys, many different life paths onto this river road. Some are here because the rocking of the boat has been too much. Too much tumult, too much uncertainty, too much pain. Some are here with questions about where the boat is going, how best to steer it, where this journey ends. Others are here as lovers of the journey, lovers of life itself, here in front, beside, behind, each a passenger, each a captain, doing the best we can. Rest here in your boat with me, the river calls. Listen to how I flow, the sound of life coursing all around you. Let the current hold you. Let the current guide you. The river that gently flows through your soul whispers, come, let us worship.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nathan. Thank you. And that lyric is a perfect lead-in to my story about belonging. After my first year of college, I realized that beyond ministry, which I knew I was in no way going to be mature enough for once I graduated, even then, I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do to pay rent and buy groceries. And as I was at a large state university surrounded by miles of cornfields, I began to think that it might be a little wise to think about transferring to a school in some city where I might begin making contacts there in the help of finding work once I graduated. So I started looking for a new school. To make a long and mostly boring story short, I knew which college I wanted to go to when I read the following story in a university, a college ranking guide. There, amid a half-page description of the school I ended up graduating from, was the following story, and I'm embellishing just a little bit. The school was not known for its athletic programs. In fact, the football team, not too long in the past, had a five-year-long losing streak, winning no games in over 5 years. It's hard to imagine that here, isn't it? This is why I will never understand Buckeye Nation. I have to be clear about that. On the day that five-year-long losing streak came to an end, there were roughly 25 people in the stands. But those 25 got the word out. We won! We won! We finally won! No, really, we won! Folks stopped what they were doing. Experiments and papers were abandoned. The cafeteria emptied. There was an exodus from the school library. At the time, the school had maybe 1,700 students. But soon, within, say, half hour, 45 minutes, over 2,000 people, students, professors, janitors, and folks who lived nearby, all descended on the football field. The throng, there is no more fitting word, the throng ended up pulling down the goalposts. Now that was a spirited community I wanted to be a part of. Educated losers who understood the value of winning. Now that's one story about the power of wanting to belong to a larger group. And while the story was a large part of wanting to attend that particular school, it was not one I told, say, my parents. I tell it to you this morning because it highlights the drive we feel to be part of something larger than ourselves. This morning I've asked Lane to join me in talking to you about membership and belonging in terms of relating to a faith community such as ours. And it began with the story about wanting to belong to a specific group because membership is just one way in which we may belong to any group. But belonging is primary. And belonging requires that we make a choice. In this congregation's Path to Membership classes, we've noticed that more and more our participants are asking, why should I join? Continuing, they ask, even if I come to worship services regularly and get involved in the justice work of the congregation, even if I pledge in support of the work of the church so that you can know you'll be able to pay your heating bill on time, why should I sign the membership book? Why should I make that kind of commitment? In short, what folks coming to our PATH classes long to be, while folks coming to our PATH classes long to be part of a vital community as much as anyone ever did, we're seeing an increasing number of blank faces when we talk about relating to the church as an institution. It's a pattern we're seeing across the denomination, and other denominations are seeing it as well. Now, there's always been a tension between those who see the need for institution building and those who feel that the UU spirit is best understood as a religious movement, not an institution at all. This is a healthy tension. In fact, it's probably necessary. The staff here, the lay leaders, the volunteers who water the plants to keep them green and set up the gorgeous displays each and every Sunday, the greeters and ushers here this morning, Kevin making sure you can hear me, thank you, Kevin, are all doing their share to create a lasting container in which the care and love here can deepen and grow and spread out beyond the walls that surround us now. Leslie read a passage from Robert Bella earlier. This line from his book, The Good Society, is chiseled on my soul. Without good institutions, there will not be good communities. And without good communities, there will not be good individuals. Without good institutions, there will not be good communities. And without good communities, there will not be good individuals. My father was as active a church lay member as anyone I've ever known. He served two consecutive terms as president for his church board, 2 3-year terms. Some would call him a masochist, and that would be fair. When he died 23 years ago, last month, this is what I said to his congregation the following Sunday. Thank you for loving him. Thank you for supporting him. Thank you for challenging him. You helped make my father the person he strived to be. And while I didn't say it then, his congregation made him a better father, and that made me a better person. Love expands. It reaches out. The support and loving challenge that held my father reached out through him to me, and hopefully through me beyond who knows where. The joy with which our greeters say hello countless times on Sunday morning likewise ripples through and beyond this room. There is love here, and it reaches out too. And the language I've been using in talking about church membership has not been resonating like it used to. Times are changing. People have more options than ever before. Sunday morning works for fewer families than it used to. Back in the early days in my ministry, I would sometimes rail at the park district for setting soccer games on Sunday morning. Then, on a morning I had a Sunday off from responsibilities, which may give you some indication of how long I've been doing this work, one Sunday morning when I had free, I took a walk and just happened by those soccer fields. And what I found changed my mind a bit. I saw happy teens and youngsters leaping out of minivans, playing outside with smiles on their faces, playing hard. And while I still hated the timing of the games, I couldn't rail against the park district anymore, not against the joy on those young faces. So I'm at an impasse. People are still hungering to belong to something greater than themselves. They deeply want to be part of a caring, supporting, yet challenging endeavors congregations like this one provide. But the drive to be part of an institution that fosters such a spirit, it's not what it used to be. Do I need to find new ways of talking about how necessary the church is in order to keep the spirit of community alive? Does the church as an institution need to find new ways to make use of the gifts of those who come looking, wanting to be part of something more? Yes to both. But what and how? The good news is that none of us are alone on this journey. Lane, you are also a lifelong Unitarian Universalist, and I know that your perspective is not always the same as mine. How does all this look to you? And I'm going to go over there so I can listen to her.
So a few weeks ago, I was on the phone with my best friend, Betty Jean. Betty Jean and I both grew up as Unitarian Universalist youth in New England. We have known each other forever. Betty Jean was talking to me about joining a church she has been a part of for the last 5 years. It struck me at the time that I hadn't heard many of my friends talking about joining a church, about becoming a member in quite a while. In fact, I find a lot of hope here during our time for all ages that there are quite a few kids saying, I'll be there. I'll be at that church in the future. This was a unique conversation amongst friends, amongst my friends, to talk about becoming a member at a congregation. See, these models of membership in churches come out of a time period when church was still at the center of our lives. In the 1950s, people attended church each and every single week. Everyone served on committees, and many folks served on the board. Many people were at church multiple evenings a week for fellowship or a Bible or textual studies. Church had a much larger role in our lives and in our culture at that time period. It's the reason many businesses are still closed on Sunday or at least have different hours. Life ran around the Christian calendar from the time of our country's founding, and in some ways, it still does up through the present day. Now, this often happened at the exclusion of our many neighbors from different faith backgrounds, but that is another sermon for another day. In today's context, the role of religion in our lives is shifting. Church is no longer a given. We are no longer solely at the center. Sunday mornings are no longer carved out in people's schedules to come to church. Each week, this institution, this church, competes with Sunday morning brunch. And who doesn't love a brunch? Right? We compete with sports practices and events like Reverend Eric talked about, and we compete with sitting at home and reading the New York Times on the one morning in your calendar when you can, right? That's why I'm so grateful you all are here this morning. The busyness of our lives has changed. The rhythm of our lives has changed, and the roles that religious communities play in our lives have changed. So perhaps our perspective needs to change. Right now in this congregation, we are all at different places in where we belong and how involved we are. Some of us are here to attend Sunday morning worship services or to bring their kids to Sunday school, and that's okay. It's wonderful. Others of us attend on Sundays and also take part in programs of the church, educational programs or social programs or social justice programs, and we are overjoyed that you take part in this community between Sundays. And we have members here that view this place at the center of their lives, that take part in leadership, in programs, and in our weekly worship services. And this congregation would not be what it is without all of you, folks in every kind of role here. When I think of organizations or movements where I want to be a member, where I belong, I think of places where I am valued. Think of places where I am seen, where I can connect with people, where I feel my presence has a positive impact, because I deeply, deeply desire for my presence to have a positive impact in this world. I want to be places where I can both contribute and be supported. My first thought is not, what committee can I serve on? My first thought is, who can I get to know here? And who is going to want to get to know me? As human beings, we all want to be valued and seen as our authentic selves. Sans the airbrushing. This is what membership is all about. This is what belonging is about. Belonging somewhere that, like, fits. Belonging somewhere where you know that you are valued, where you know that you share values with other folks, places that honor who each of us are. It's about where we choose to belong and where we choose to stay, where we feel engaged and where our hearts live. See, that friend of mine, Betty Jean, what was the tipping point on the scale for her for when she decided to become a member at this church? Was she had a sudden medical emergency come up in her life. There in that moment, these folks at this congregation were bringing meals. They were calling her. They were visiting her during times when she usually probably would not want to visit. After recovering from a surgery, most folks don't want to visit, but these people were there. These people were connecting with her. They were seeing her for who she really was. And that's what tipped the scale for her. It's what church is all about, as far as I'm concerned. And see, I wonder how many of us here have similar stories. There are so many gifts that each one of us brings here. So many gifts. Out there, just past Fellowship Hall here in this building, we have this idea board for religious education, this bulletin board. I like to put questions up on it and have folks respond. And recently I put a question up there. What gifts do you bring to First UU? Everybody was offered a little paper flower to plant in a garden of gifts up on this idea board. So I asked the question, what gifts do you have to bring to First UU? And I'll tell you, the number one answer was love. Folks of all ages responded. Some of those loves were more legible than others. But the number one piece that we had to bring here was love, closely followed by creativity and happiness. That feels significant to me. What is important about this community is that we love. It's that we care. That's what's at the center and the heart of this community. What do you bring to this space? How do you embody love here? How have you connected with folks here? Where do you feel like you belong? When I have met with people newly interested in this congregation, the most common response to my very common question, what brought you here, is connection. It's what folks are seeking right now. And it's the church's purpose to offer connection to the people who come seeking and to the people who are already here. To connect people to one another, to connect people with spiritual or emotional sustenance, to connect people to a higher purpose or a calling for their lives, one of our purposes is to connect people to what they hold most holy and most dear. Belonging in this place is all about connecting. Belonging anywhere is all about connecting. It's about finding that one person or that group of people who recognize you and see you for who you are. Church membership is all about, I believe, getting to know one another and feeling less alone. I think that's why we're all here this morning. Each of us has chosen to be in this place, in this worship center, at this time on this morning. You know, I don't know what this sort of broader cultural shift is going to mean for Unitarian Universalism or even for First UU in particular. I don't know what it's going to mean that church is now a choice and it's no longer a given. We certainly can't see where all of this is going, though I would love to have that TARDIS for real and be able to see what the future of this is going to look like. But Eric, I'm wondering, do you have any ideas?
Well, I don't have a TARDIS. And I don't have any grand unified field theories. But I do go back, Lane, to what you said when you said, when I think of organizations or movements where I want to belong, I think of places where I'm valued, where I'm seen, where I can connect with people, and where I feel my presence has a positive impact. We want to be part of something good that's tangible. And the best way I can think of to move forward will be to be very intentional about talking to one another, about what we need from and what we have to offer our community here. And then we have to hold on to what comes out of those conversations when we engage one another as lovingly as knights of old may have held the Holy Grail.
I totally agree. I think that the new vision of belonging to this congregation and to Unitarian Universalism is shaped by the people who walk through these doors each Sunday. It's shaped by everybody here. It's shaped by the people who are trying out Unitarian Universalism for the first time. And it is also shaped by the folks who have been here for a long time and who remain here. And dialogue between these two parties, I think, will create the future of Unitarian Universalism and the future of this beloved community. Let it be our TARDIS. May it be so.